to another episode of Talking Moto. Today we have our playoff round number one, which was absolutely full of chaos. I mentioned we were going to do the shows a little bit different on the last episode for these playoffs, just to see if I like how it'll kind of flow maybe a little bit better, hopefully, and just kind of see how it goes from there. But this week, obviously, everything will be completely different because we only had one moto in each class when we should have had two motos in each class. So that will change things up big time for sure. That shakes up the points a lot. Like I said, for both classes, due to the lightning cancellation, I guess would probably be the best way to say it. It sucked that... Well, I'll just throw in my thoughts on the lightning cancellation right now, I guess, since we are doing this episode a little bit different. I feel like they should have had it set up a little bit better for something like this to happen. They had no lights in the outdoor motocross section of the track, so they would have had to modify the track, even if it was just like a really dark day and it was raining all day long, dark clouds. Vision would have been a problem in that back section anyway. So I feel like maybe we can probably get some like roll-in lights or something to be able to actually see back there. So that's just dangerous as it is, I guess. I know back in Vegas last year, the shadows and how dark it was in that back motocross section was a big problem as well. So I'm not like super surprised that they didn't have adequate lighting back there, because I mean they didn't have it last year, even when they had a 11 o'clock Eastern start, or I think it was 11, so probably 8 o'clock over Vegas time. So I mean it's dark when they start over there anyway, and they had bad lighting for that race. They thought they could get away with it here. I think if they had better lighting, then they would have been able to race. But since they didn't have good lighting back where there was... The track back there was absolutely insane with ruts and how the jumps were. That's where we saw... holy smokes, Garrett Marchbanks just had a major brain fart. That's where we saw Garrett Marchbanks go down and end his day. Haven't seen an update on him either, by the way. I will check and hopefully get that by the end of this show. So the track back there was sketchy. It was very deep, very rutted. I think it was a completely different track back there than it was in the front on the actual drag strip section of the track. I said it's very... I think these Supercross rounds are very... Or Super Motocross playoff rounds are very Supercross heavy. I think I was proven wrong here in Charlotte. I think it was that outdoor motocross section outside the actual drag strip. I think that was... one of the main things that was holding people up back there, just because it was super deep back there, super rutty. If you went inside, it seemed like you were losing all your momentum, all your drive, and you weren't able to keep it up around there. There's quite a few times watching the races where it seemed like guys would go inside and then they wouldn't be able to hit just a double that everybody else was hitting, and they were losing time, losing position due to that. And so I think that's going to change a lot when we move indoors here, coming up to St. Louis this next weekend, which we still don't have the whole track map, but it is very supercrossy, a lot more bowl turns in the track map. There is quite a bit of sand. We will get to that a little bit more at the end of this episode here when we do a little quick preview for St. Louis. But I think... overall, Charlotte, I know I started this all about the lightning delay. I'm pretty sure I gave adequate thoughts on that. On if they had lights back there, I think they would have been able to do it. I heard mixed reports. See, now I'm back on it again. I'm remembering stuff I forgot about a little bit ago. I believe it was Steve Mathis said he didn't see lightning, or someone else said they didn't see lightning, and he quote tweeted it and said the opposite, or someone quote tweeted him and said the opposite. I can't remember if he was the one that didn't see lightning and someone said there was lightning, or he said there was lightning and someone said there wasn't lightning. But anyway, people are throwing conspiracy theories out there that they didn't want to get fined for noise complaints, even though they were at a drag strip, which I've never been to a drag strip when there is like actual drag cars going down it. But I got to assume, because I've seen videos, that they are very, very loud. Two actual drag cars going down that lane are much louder than 22 dirt bikes at one time, at least in my opinion. Also, dirt bikes a little bit more spread out. I don't think there is any conspiracies of that should have been thrown out there. I think that's all a bunch of malarkey, in my opinion. I did start going on a different path, and then I've now completely forgotten where it's at. But looking at the track map, it is kind of interesting looking back that there are lights back there, but they are all pointed at the drag strip itself. And so there is quite a bit that would not have been lit up. And remembering the races, that was some of the deeper sections that we had back there. So now jumping into, I think how we'll do this is we'll still do a little bit of 250 here at the beginning, and then we will move on to 450. So to start the actual race recap portion of this, I went perfect. Not to pat myself on the back or nothing, but I predicted it perfectly of Jet Lawrence and Hayden Deegan winning the first round. And Hayden Deegan came out absolutely firing. He was the fastest qualifier with a 157.973. And then this is where the qualifying gets a little messy here, because he was the fastest seeded qualifier, while Ty Masterpool was the fastest qualifier overall with a 156. But since Ty Masterpool didn't make it into the top 20 in combined points, that basically didn't matter whatsoever for him. That just means he got the first gate pick in what they called the wild card race. So, I mean, that kind of sucks for Ty Masterpool. You go out there, they were the first session of the day when the track was the absolute best. So he was able to go out there and put down a fast time. Ty Masterpool did also go on and end up winning that wild card race, and also had the fastest fastest lap time in that wild card race. I really wish that Racer X had a little bit better kind of like a combined qualifier, like a combined seated qualifier type of deal. I don't see anything like that. I don't know if maybe the Super Motocross website has something like that. Trying to take a peek at this here. Results. Free practice. Nope. It's all, there's nothing combined practice results. Nope. Perfect. Okay, so next week I will come into this with a little bit more prep work done here for qualifying, so I can smoothly move through this, because this would take a lot of clicking between seeded qualifier 1 and 2 to figure out who was, because I think Levi Kitchen, now looking at it, was the second fastest qualifier. Another big thing out of qualifying, Juju Bomer. There was one particular jump or rhythm section that caused three pretty big crashes. Malcolm Stewart had one on Friday where he came up short, messed up his core, he said, big time, wasn't able to do anything Saturday, said he gave it a shot in free practice, wasn't able to do it. And then Seth Hamaker also had a pretty big little get up or get off, I should say, that in qualifying as well. And then Julien Bomer also had a big one that sent him into the hospital. Sadly, his season is over. Possibly a, more than most likely out for most, if not all of next year. It was an L4. Hang on, I'm going to take a break actually so I can go rewatch his video and write everything down, because there, when I watched it the first time, he had quite a bit to say. Okay, so I found the video and I'm just going to play it for you guys. This is what Julien Bomer posted. He is, he's in a neck brace and it looks like a pretty, intense back brace as well. So here is what Julien Bomer had to say.
Regarding me right now, I had surgery on my lower lumbar. My L3 was a burst fracture, and I have fractures to my L2 and 4. They put some screws and rods in, so just want to give you guys an update on the road recovery, and I'll see you guys soon.
So that is what happened to Julien Bomer. So, yeah, like I said, sadly, he will most likely be out for quite a bit of time. And he, what really sucks is just announced that he was going to do the Australian Supercross. So he will be missing that. He will be missing quite a bit of time recovering. Like you said, I did see a video of him, though. He was up and walking with a walker, and he is out of the hospital. I saw he posted today, actually, that he is made his way out of the hospital. So that is good news for Julien Bomer, at least, as good as you could get. What else do we got here now? A couple things that stood out for this race in general. The split start was very, very interesting. I wish there was a better way that they could have shown it on TV. If I'm remembering correctly, last year when they had split starts in the SMX playoffs, they had like close-up cameras of both gates. So they kind of went split screen on the TV, and they had close-up cameras where you could watch and actually kind of see who is who. Because with the way they had it this year, the camera was very far away. It was very difficult to see. And I know for the 450s, when watching it, I was like, oh, hey, looks like Chase Sexton got a great jump. And then looked like Jet Lawrence kind of got side by side. And then one of them pulled away, ended up being Jet Lawrence. And it was a little confusing at first to figure out which one it was, because the camera was so far away and it was difficult to see exactly who was who. So I wish that was a little bit better. Also, they were on big NBC. At this point, this segment here, you can name this just a full-on bash of big NBC. The way they handled the delay seemed terrible in my mind. I didn't watch any of the races live. I was busy Saturday, had a birthday party Saturday. So I wasn't watching Saturday, But when I went to watch on Sunday, I knew there was a delay. I didn't know exactly that the second motos got canceled because I try to seclude myself from all information so I can still watch the races like as a fan watching it live, because I don't want to get spoiled. I want to like sit there on my couch and scream and be like, oh my God, well, look what just happened. So I didn't know that all the races, the second motos, got canceled until basically I was on Peacock, watching it on Peacock. After the first motos, you can kind of like click on the screen and see the timeline on the bottom, and it was just consistent yellow dot, yellow dot, yellow dot, which if you're on Peacock, you know those yellow dots stand for commercials, and it was absolutely ridiculous how many commercials they went to during that delay. I mean, I feel like they could have done so much more instead of just constantly going to a commercial. I mean, like, go back there, interview. They kept showing, like, the Monster Energy Yamaha Star Racing pits. They kept showing them, and they kept showing the Pro Circuit team, because shout out Jorge Prado and Jason Anderson. Well, Jason Anderson's legit reason. Jorge Prado is just a quitter. Kawasaki had no 450 factory guys, so they just kept showing their 250 team and their riders in there. And I feel like it took them way too long to actually go up to somebody, one of the racers, and interview them, ask them their thoughts. They finally did it with Hayden Deegan and Jet Lawrence very far into the delay. They were showing old replays of last year's final moto for the 450s in Vegas, which that was cool to like rewatch that, I guess. But it just, I feel like we didn't get to hear from, unless I like something crazy happened, we didn't get to hear from the 250 podium guys except for Hayden Deegan. I would have loved to hear from Joe Shimoda live right after he came from, I think it was 11th all the way up to technically third, because Levi Kitchen, there, we'll get into that stuff in a little bit. Like Seth Hammaker, didn't get to hear from him. We only heard from Hayden Deegan. Would have loved to hear Seth Hammaker's thoughts on, hey, what happened? Like, you had a 12-second lead. Hayden Deegan came, hunted you down, and got you. Like, what happened? Was he just faster than you? Did you get tight? Something with the bike. Later, track broke down. Bike wasn't working as good. Like, I would have loved to hear that from Seth Hammaker, and there was no coverage of it at all. Joe Shimoda, they were able to finally talk to him about 2.5 hours after his first moto to see exactly kind of what happened when he was really aggressive there behind Seth Hammaker going for the pass for the lead. And he said he just, exactly what I just said, he was a little too aggressive, sent it in there a little bit too hard, thought Seth Hammaker was going to move. I think Seth Hammaker did the perfect thing. He had his bike had a bigger, was in the lead. Holy smokes. Seth Hammaker's bike was in front of Joe Shimoda's bike. You got to close that door if you know someone's going to try and open it on the inside there. And Shimoda just was basically hoping Hammaker was going to hit the brakes and let Joe make the pass, and Seth Hammaker did the right thing and shut the door. Joe Shimoda went down to 11th place, fights back up to 4th place, and Levi Kitchen, there was on that red cross flag for Garrett Marchbanks, I mentioned that he crashed. He was in a weird spot. He was in the back motocross section, goes down. He was kind of in between the lanes, so they had the red cross flags only on one side, not the other. I don't know how to describe it without being able to show it here. Obviously, it's just podcast, no visuals or nothing. So coming left-hand turn, it goes double, double, right-hand turn, then you got another double, They only had the Red Cross flags on that one double coming out of the right-hand turn. And March Banks was in between the double-double and just the single double. That's probably the most confusing way to say it, but I think it might also be the best way to say it. And so Levi jumped and made a pass when you can't make the pass there. So he got docked position. So Joe Shimoda, unlike the summer where he got docked a position for making a pass on a Red Cross flag, Joe Shimoda is now able to go to third, where he finished in third. So he went from 11th to third place. Seth Hammaker also jumped on it, but he did not make a pass. So he got penalized 5 championship points, which we saw last year in the 450 class. Jet Lawrence and Hunter Lawrence were tied. Jet Lawrence had the tiebreaker, so he won. Or no, I think Jet might have won by 1 point. But 5 points can make a huge difference in this. We saw in Supercross in the 450s, 5 points. Actually, Cooper Webb, I think, won by 6 points this year. But anyway, 5 points would have made a big difference. Either way, so it's going to be really interesting to see if those 5 points come up and bite Seth Hammaker once we get to the end in Vegas. Now, I don't think he's going to be a championship guy, but if he keeps putting in rides like he did here in Concord, North Carolina, then I think there could be a chance. I just do not think there will be. Well, it just caught my eye that looking at the lap times here for Moto 1, everybody's fastest lap, everybody's, you know, around the 156, 159 range, and then you get to fourth place, and it's Levi Kitchen with a 56.750. I don't know how he didn't win the race if he was running lap times that were a minute faster than everybody else. I'm just kidding. I'm going to assume that's probably supposed to be a 156.750. I know there was a transponder problem with Shimoda and Kitchen on the last couple laps because they just started absolutely dropping. Big picture, though, I think one of the guys who kind of got a little screwed over by there only being one moto, I think surprisingly, was Joe Shimoda, because he did have the speed to be a race winner here. I mean, he ran the fastest lap. He ran a 156.381, and assuming Levi Kitchens is a 156 and not just a 56, Shimoda was even faster than Levi Kitchen by, was it 5/10 of a second? So I think Shimoda might have been the guy in the 250 class to get a little shafted here by only getting one moto. Another kind of a little bit of surprise to me, Austin Faulkner finished 5th here. We saw him kind of string together a couple pretty solid motos in a row in motocross, and then he kind of dipped down again. Really, really hoping that he can string together now 2 more good rounds here in the playoffs. Kind of prove to hopefully himself, because I don't remember exactly. I think it might have been Jason Wygant on the broadcast compared it to like football, like a normal draft. Austin Faulkner would have been the first overall pick coming out of amateurs, and injuries have just absolutely killed him. And so it's really nice to see Faulkner back up to what possibly could be the speed that he used to have, and that would be very, very exciting, especially with, you know, maybe being on this Triumph team next year, maybe his last year in the 250s, depending on how everything goes. I could definitely see him being a 450 guy on Triumph in a couple years, assuming that they get the bike ready and over here in time and have all like the the little weird rules that they got on, got to have so many out there on showroom floors and whatnot before you can race it, actually. But yeah, I think he might have benefited really from there only being one moto, because it just seems like sometimes he'll have a good moto and then he'll have a bad moto in Moto 2 and motocross. And he got out of North Carolina with only one moto. It was a good moto in fifth. There was quite a while where he was running on the podium before late, where Kitchen and Faulkner were able to go up there and catch up to him and make passes on him. What else do we got here in the 250 class that tickled my brain? I don't really think there's anything else too super crazy here for the 250s, to be honest. This show, I'm not surprised this show is going to be a little bit shorter, that we had only half the races to talk about. So, yeah, I think I'm going to take a quick little break here, figure out if I got anything else left on the 250s, and then I'll either come back on 250s or we'll come back with the 450s. And I kind of like how this show is a little bit more free flowing, and honestly I don't feel like as just robotic as I did, how I was just basically saying races and how they turned out. And there's a giant semi that just pulled up. I feel a little bit more flowing and free doing the shows this way. So I think I kind of like it. And we'll see how it goes the rest of the show. But yeah, I'm going to take a break here, see if there is anything else to talk about in the 250 class. And yeah, I'll let you know on the other side of this. Okay, we are back. I couldn't find really anything else on the 250s I really wanted to cover. Also, I did look up Garrett Marchbanks. Still can't find any news about him. So once again, hopefully he will be able to come back and race this upcoming weekend here in St. Louis. But now getting into the 450 side of things. Last week, I said it might be crazy, but I'm thinking there's an outside chance that Chase Sexton can go out there and win this little three-round championship. And he went out there. He was the fastest qualifier. He ran a 155.592. And so at that point, I was thinking, all right, I got myself in a good spot, made that bold prediction. At least I think it's a pretty bold prediction to pick Chase Sexton as just having a chance to win this championship. Now, granted, I didn't say I think he would win the championship. I think he's got one of the two that has a chance. So he goes out, fastest qualifier. I noticed it a lot more with the 450 guys talking about how crazy the track was. Now, that is also due to they go out there second, and so the track's a lot more ripped up for the 450 guys than it was for the 250 guys. I just wanted to check something real quick and make sure that the seeded qualifier did go before the unseeded qualifier here in the 450s, and that is what happened. So the 450s qualifying, they got their best shot at it for the 450 class in general. I don't know if that made a lot of sense out loud, but I think it made sense in my head. So we had Chase Sexton out there, fastest qualifier. And once again, now granted, I did take that big break, or that break here. And I mentioned in the 250s, I got to do a little bit more prep work to make sure I can get all my qualifying numbers together. And I did not do that. But looking at it, still pretty impressive. Malcolm Stewart ran a 205 with a messed up core, he said. Shout out to Malcolm Stewart for at least going out there and giving it an honest shot. He seems like definitely one of those guys that will always try and at least give you 100% of what he has that day. And sadly, 100% was, 10 seconds off the pace, and he just couldn't do it in Concord. I almost said Charlotte. I think I might have said Charlotte earlier. Concord, North Carolina. But back to racing and not geography. Jet Lawrence, not a big surprise that he was also up there in qualifying. One thing that did kind of surprise me, Justin Cooper, known a little bit for his qualifying speed, didn't exactly have it. He was a couple seconds off the pace in qualifying, and then, of course, when you got to the races, he went down early, was in absolute dead last. He was able to make a pretty good fight up the chain here, got to 11th, and honestly, I think going from 22nd to 11th in a 20-minute moto on a track that was as brutal as it was for them, that's very impressive in my mind, to be honest. I think he might have dropped the ball a little bit when it comes to seeding and point wise. And I talked about the guy who missed out the most on having only one moto for the 250s, and we'll do it again here for the 450s. I think it's Justin Cooper. He's shown he is very consistent. He's been to all the races. Ooh, I had a burp. I just had to like swallow. That was interesting. Justin Cooper, been to the races, did everything right this year, and just bad luck off the start, goes down absolutely dead last. Now he was sitting first place in the points, said how cool it was to have the red plate for the first time in his 450 career. And now he's down in third place. He's 11 points back. So there's still a chance if he can be that same consistent Justin Cooper that he has been all year. It's just he's got to bank on a little bit of something that hasn't really happened all too often. And that's Jet Lawrence making a major mistake. And I also talked about the camera angle in the 250 for the start, because Justin Cooper went down pretty early, and trying to watch the clip back here on, I said clip, by the way, trying to watch that back here on the social medias, you can't see anything still, so not exactly sure what happened to Justin Cooper, like how he went down, not sure if he had contact with another rider. They never showed a replay on TV, so I'm just not sure if they were like, hey, red point or red plate guy went down. Who cares? I'm sure that wasn't the case, because, you know, they always show something if something happens to the points leader and they got a shot of it, even if it's from Narnia, they're still going to show it. Didn't have any video really of what happened to Justin Cooper, so that sucks for him. I think, like I just said, I really think he missed out the most on not having a second moto, because coming from dead last to 11th, like I said, very impressive. In traffic, he was only 4 seconds. His fastest time was only 4 seconds slower than Jet Lawrence, who Jet Lawrence had clear track the entire way, until like you get to lappers, obviously, but he had a clean, clear track, and Justin Cooper was still able to put in some very, very solid laps coming through traffic. He ran, what did I say, a 202.8 here in the only moto. I was about to say the first moto. So yeah, 2 seconds off his own pace in qualifying. which pretty impressive what old Jay Coop was able to do, but I still think he hurt the most out of all the 450 guys. Eli Tomac is another guy I want to talk about here. He was pretty solid in Charlotte last year. Pretty solid again this year in Charlotte. See, I just did it. I called it Charlotte. It's Concord. It's not Charlotte. He was pretty solid last year in Concord. He was pretty solid again this year, finishing third. I think this was probably the best Eli Tomac we've seen since probably that high point Moto win that he had in Moto 2, where it was shortened. It got called early, also due to lightning in that case as well, just like this past weekend. So I think that is very, very good to see. We're going to St. Louis, where he's been there a lot. If my mind serves me correctly, he has done pretty solid in St. Louis. Last time in 2024, yeah, he got a win there. Got a third, a fourth, a win, a seventh. Ooh, 2016, got a seventh. Second, six, 13, a one. So yeah, he's had quite a bit of success in St. Louis, has Eli Tomac, and now I am accidentally clicking on Daytona back in 2014. Whoops-a-daisy. So yeah, we're going to St. Louis, where Eli Tomac has quite a bit of success in the past. Like I just said, only finished off the podium a couple times. Got a handful of wins. More wins there than he's finished off the podium, I think, if I just saw all that correctly. Or maybe it was tied 4-4. Or 3-4, maybe, possibly. But I could definitely see Eli Tomac kind of throwing his hat in the ring. He's down 12. He's tied with Hunter Lawrence for fourth place right now. I am worried that Eli Tomac might be burnt out when we get to the Motocross of Nations, sadly. But that is a bridge we will cross when we get to back to Indiana for the Motocross of Nations. Hoping it's not the case. But that thought just legitimately, it just popped into my mind. I am worried that Eli Tomac might be a little burnt out when we get to the Nations. He wasn't last year. He put on a pretty good show last year for America. I'm hoping it's the same this year, but a little bit better so we can get that first place back. We need that 1-2-3 back for the USA here. What else? Let me check my notes here. Eli Tomac. Easily could have gotten second place in this race. I totally forgot. He just got kind of like Joe Shimoda, a little too aggressive, but in a different section and or a different turn and a different reason for his crash. Joe Shimoda got aggressive, tried to go inside, door wasn't open. Shimoda goes down. This scenario, Eli Tomac got a little aggressive coming out of a turn. It was one of them. Them weird turns where they go over the concrete wall, I do believe. Go over the concrete wall, which I still think we should do something about them freaking concrete walls. They should be padded or something. But Eli Tomac gets over the wall on the downside of it, and his rear tire just slides out, gets out of the rut. Yeah, basically, as soon as he gets back down to flat ground, his back tire starts sliding over the rut, and rear end just kind of slides out. He said he just got on it a little too hard, he thinks. Looking at the replay, it's exactly what happened. back tire slides out. I'm assuming he probably just didn't feel it sliding, thought he was still in the rut, and out goes the back tire. Chase Sexton even said he got a little bit of a gift with Eli going down, so that's how Sexton was able to make the pass on him to get to second place. And Eli Tomac in third. Then he had Hunter Lawrence on him for a little bit, was able to hold off Hunter Lawrence and finish in third. One kind of interesting thing of note here. Jet Lawrence, there's a point where he had about a 3.6 second gap over Sexton, which was at about the halfway point. Sexton was able to get it down to 2.5, but then I think as soon as he got it down to 2.5, the heavy winds came in. You could see it on TV. The big advertisement, like kind of tent looking things, boards, whatever you want to call them, started going flying. Peacock cut out. I'm assuming it probably did the same thing on NBC Live, because Weej, when it came back, Weej was talking about how it blew the satellites and that got all messed up. And so that was about 3 minutes left. The heavy wind really started. The clouds really started coming in as well. And I think that might be why Jet was able to win by over 4 seconds around that area somewhere, because didn't get to see the finish live. So I'm assuming that's probably why Sexton maybe backed down a little bit, knew he had a little bit of a gap over Eli Tomac, and just probably didn't want to push it too hard and something crazy go on when they're in the air. I mean, with the heavy winds that there was, guys jumping, you got to kind of account for that when you're that high up in the air, account for getting blown a little, getting blown in the air a little bit to the left or right, depending on which way you're jumping and which way the wind's coming. So my guess is Sexton probably kind of knew he wasn't going to be able to catch Jet at that point and knew he had that gap over Tomac and just wanted to kind of chill out a little bit and ride it in for a safe second place, which honestly, I am very happy if that is the case for Chase Sexton. He talked on the podium how crazy the track was. He said it was probably, I don't remember if he said sketchy or gnarly, one of those two words, but he said it was either the sketchiest track or the gnarliest track he's ever ridden. So that just goes to prove that even these pro guys, I think it was mainly focused towards that back outdoor section where it was just absolutely insane back there. Brought up the kickers off the jumps. I think that might have had something to do with some of the crashes we saw in the 250 class in that one rhythm section, and maybe even what happened to old Malcolm Stewart on Friday. Had to remember exactly what day that happened to old Malk. But yeah, I think that might be part of the reason we saw some of them big crashes. And my brain just kind of turned off for a second. Cooper Webb. They interviewed Cooper Webb before the race. He said it looked like a lot more of a motocross track than a supercross track, because there's only one bowl turn, only one like supercross rhythm. And it's not a secret, Cooper Webb is a lot better at supercross than he is at motocross. So I'm not super surprised that he kind of struggled a little bit here. And he's still sixth in points, 14 back of Jet Lawrence. And I think he's going to have a lot better showing in St. Louis when it's basically a supercross track. When I was talking last week how I think these tracks are mainly supercross, like even not so much motocross, I think this track will really prove that unless they just get the absolute softest dirt possible and make it super rutted inside the stadium. Looking at the track map, Yes, there's no Supercross triples. But once again, like, at looking at the track map, it looks 100% like we are just looking at a regular Supercross track, but the middle jump and the triple to make it a double is just taken out, and the distance looks about the same as the normal Supercross triples. The only thing is lots of sand. One thing, Cooper Webb, Supercross sand, pops into my mind is Detroit a couple years ago, heat race. He was leading, went down in the sand. Plessinger got the lead. That was also right in front of us, and the entire place went nuts. So that just kind of popped into my mind about Cooper Webb and Supercross sand because, like I said, it was directly in front of us. Who else? Or what else? Okay, so the last thing I wanted to talk about real quick, or the last guy I wanted to talk about real quick, Hunter Lawrence. Little interesting day from Hunter Lawrence. Didn't get his prototypical good start like he and Jet both typically do get basically all the time. Hunter Lawrence came out, crossed the hole shot line in sixth place. Obviously still very good. And there's more guys now back racing. Roczen's back. Sexton's back. Cooper Webb's back. All three of those guys were able to start in front of Hunter Lawrence. So the only one that kind of surprised me there is Chase Sexton being able to get a better start than Hunter. I know going into that their first turn, Chase Sexton had the inside on him, and Sexton just kind of went wide exiting the turn. So I think that might have shuffled back Hunter Lawrence a little bit. But on the gate, it did go Jet Lawrence, Chase Sexton, Hunter Lawrence, Jet with the furthest inside out of the three of them, and then Hunter, the furthest outside with Sexton sandwiched in the middle there. But I still think it was a pretty solid race overall from Hunter. Didn't quite do too much. Lap times. Hunter Lawrence was running about the same lap times, a pretty competitive lap time to everybody in front of him. They were all in the 158s. He had the fastest lap time of the entire race, actually, with a 158.4. And everyone in front of him, Tomac ran a 58.7. Same as Sexton, and then Jet Lawrence ran a 58.8. So, Hunter Lawrence, he had the speed. I think he just probably struggled a little bit with passing. I did see a video of him after the race saying, pretty sketchy out there. And I think it was just a little difficult for, I think, probably everybody really to make passes. So I think that's probably the reason why we didn't see Hunter Lawrence get up to his typical two spot, finishing right behind Jet like we've seen all summer long. He was able to get on the back wheel of Eli Tomac after Tomac got up from his little slide out there, but then wasn't really able to do anything with it. Couldn't make the move on him. Tomac was able to hold him off and keep away from him. So now, honestly, I think that probably wraps us up pretty good. RJ Hampshire, very respectable fifth place, like he's had all season long, really. Ken Roczen back in sixth. Cooper Webb knew he was going to struggle going into this with it being fairly motocross heavy. Finished in seventh, which I can see Cooper Webb having a strong next race. Looking at the points now, we got Chase Sexton, 9 behind Jet, Justin Cooper, 11 behind Jet, and then Hunter Lawrence and Eli, 12 back. Cooper Webb already 14 back. One thing that sucks is RJ Hampshire 18, Kent Roczen 20. So if you miss out on that, if you kind of drop the ball here early and you were already a lower seed than the guy who ended up winning, it makes it pretty darn difficult for you to make up some points here. So even Tomac and Hunter Lawrence, they're going to need to do some damage next week going into St. Louis with the double point round. So it's going to be interesting to see how they can do that. So now looking at the track map here, we now have the full map they have posted online. In that section where it goes underneath the stands, it is just go in there, sand, left-hand 180-degree turn, and then come right back out. So it is basically just Supercross with some more sand on it. There is an interesting little section where on the track map they got it built out where it looks like there's a 180 left-hand turn where if you go inside, you'll hit a different rhythm or a different sequence, I guess would probably be the best way to put it, than if you go outside. And it looks like there might be a little berm built in the middle of that turn already to kind of encourage inside going to the inside. But besides that, looks very super crossy, and I think a lot of that is just due to the fact that they're in a stadium, so just working with what they got. So it's going to be probably the most Supercross race that we've seen here so far. I mean, even when they went to Chicago, it was on a NASCAR track, so not super surprised that the first stadiumed SMX playoff round will look very much like a Supercross. Gates, starting gate is back to one. No split start, done with that. Left-hand turn, looks like it might close off pretty hard if you're on the inside. Looks like it gets pretty tight going into that first little rhythm section that they got. Bunch more bowl turns. So Cooper Webb, expect to see him maybe even fighting for a podium in St. Louis. But I think, I'm not just saying this because he got second, fastest qualifier, ran a faster lap. I really think Chase Sexton is going to go out there and win in St. Louis. It's going to definitely be a very exciting race this Saturday. And looking forward to hopefully a Sexton win in 250s. I think I got to go with Joe Shimoda. We saw what he could do early in Supercross, and then the broken fingers kind of held him up a little bit. So I don't think we got to see his true full potential in Supercross. And I think he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. Maybe a little angry from what happened in round one in Concord, North Carolina. So I'm going Joe Shimoda 250s and Chase Sexton in the 450 class. And that'll wrap us up here. Looking forward to watching this race most likely on Sunday, like I did with round one. Talking underscore moto on X. Go give it a follow. Hit me up there. Do all the fun stuff on that. And we will be back next week talking round two, probably in the same format. I kind of liked how this format went. Seems like it was a lot easier. I didn't even think I would make it to, right now we're at 54 minutes. I didn't think we'd make it this far with just one round, but I think this new format here might have helped it out a little bit. Felt like it flowed a little bit better and not so bullet point, bullet point, bullet point type of thing. So looking forward to next week's show, doing the same thing, talking about more racing. Talking underscore moto on X. We'll be back next week. See ya.